this happen? Well, it's a long story.
Alright, so we're talking about Thor Ragnarok. You know, Thor Ragnarok is the third Thor film in the series, and it's considered the most popular, and it's also the largest divergent film from the other two. Like, it's the least similar. So, it was Allison's idea to talk about Thor Ragnarok. I'm curious about why you chose this movie, or thought this would be a good one to talk about. I just watched it this morning.
Oh, is it?
So you, it's actually kind of fresh on my mind.
You rewatched it. Yeah, I watched it last night.
I rewatched it. Yeah.
I actually really love this movie. I think it's so much fun. It's just fun from beginning to end. And I do have my reasons for bringing it up in this context, because I think it does have some, not necessarily negative things in terms of men's issues or just the approach that we take in the stuff that we talk about on this channel. I actually think it does some things really well. And it's fun to talk about something that isn't negative for once. And I really love this film, like, a lot. And I think it might be my favorite aside from the first one.
What do you mean, like, the are you talking about a Marvel film or a Thor film?
No, not even, well, it was a Marvel film, but it's not a Thor film. It's Star-Lord.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Sure.
Like, why could that not come out of my mouth? I was seeing every aspect of it, but the words were not coming. Anyway, so that, I mean, I think this is my favorite show from this particular franchise, aside from the first Guardians of the Galaxy, which I really liked. It also has...
I love Guardians. I love Guardians.
And of course...
I like them both, actually.
The first Guardians of the Galaxy also had Lee Pace in it, so there you go. And that's all I will say. That's all I'll say on that particular score. So, yeah.
Okay.
This has got to be right up there, right up with the first Guardians of the Galaxy. And I just love the trappings, the 80s callbacks, the style. The style is just really, really great.
Aesthetically, there was definitely a lot of callbacks, specifically to Jack Kirby's artwork. And he was like the guy who designed the visual look of the Thor, Asgard, all the outer space stuff, all the cosmic stuff. You know, Jack Kirby mostly did the work, or at least laid the foundation for all the other guys that followed. So I like a lot that there was a lot of nods to that, you know, that his art style, that weird kind of surrealist cubist stuff with the almost like, I don't know, a lot of geometric shapes and stuff, and definitely cool. Like, the Kirby shit was cool. So
yeah, I think there's another artist, and I'm going to try my best to pronounce his name, Jean Grard, I believe. And I probably have mispronounced it, but I saw touches of his art style in there as well. And it definitely was very 80s and. Like I said, I love that about it. The reason why I wanted to talk about it specifically, besides the fact that I just really, really liked it, is it had some, I mean, it doesn't have a lot of relevance to men's issues, but it had some treatment of things that I actually really appreciated. And I noticed.
Okay.
And other people might not notice it. For example, A lot of the relationships in the film, and the important relationships in the film, were between Thor and his father, Thor and his brother, and that kind of exploration doesn't necessarily happen a heck of a lot. And I really appreciate the fact that they sort of seem to have walked back Odin as the patriarchal bastard that they had from the previous films. I think it was Dark World.
Yeah.
And I was not really appreciating that at all. So the real central part of Thor's development in this film is sort of launched by his relationship with his father. So just to get into a bit of a description, so spoilers, the story starts where Thor is fighting Surtur. What's
Surtur?
Surtur. Okay, Surtur.
Thor, son of Odin.
Surtur, son of a bitch, you're still alive.
Okay, well, it wouldn't be a Honey Badger Radio without me mispronouncing shit. Surtur. So Surtur is the demon, the fire demon that's going to bring about Ragnarok, the end of Asgard, which is, of course, Thor's home. And he manages to defeat Surtur and take his crown and take it back to the vault of Asgard. And in the meantime, he learns that Odin is not on the throne. It's actually Loki disguised as Odin. And he confronts Loki, yeah, and then he goes to find where Loki has banished their father. And they find him, well, after this interlude, this great interlude with Doctor Strange, is another character that I really like from the Marvel Universe. They find his father, and it's
in Norway.
In Norway, and it's, yeah, and he's essentially about to, I guess, transcend to a higher plane. Odin is about to transcend to a higher plane, and as he does so, he explains that his firstborn, Hela, the goddess of death,
Hela,
has returned. He can no longer contain her, and he's going to. And this is now Thor's fight, and Odin tells him before he dies, you know, you're much stronger than me, and you need to find that strength. And it's this tragedy of Thor losing his father, and then, I don't know, it's like this whole story of trying to find what his father meant by saying, Thor, you're stronger than I am. Mm-hmm. And going woven through the entire movie, which I thought was really, it was very compelling for me to just watch. And it, and something that you don't see necessarily a lot is, I've noticed with a lot of movies lately that they don't really explore the relationship of a biological father with his son. It's mm-hmm. usually, if it is a father, it's a father figure, like a stepfather, or somebody else who's standing in for the father.
A mentor. Or something, yeah.
And to create this sort of situation where Odin is mentoring Thor, and I mean, I guess he's been mentoring him all along, but now he's really become sort of his spiritual mentor as Thor grows into being a leader of his people. And then his other relationship in this story that's really important is, of course, his relationship with his brother. And a lot of people would be like, well, it's this contentious relationship. They're antagonists. Thor is, Loki is Thor's great adversary. And yeah, there is an element of that, but he's...
Yeah, but it's...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the Thor-Loki relationship was never, you know, entirely antagonistic, not even from the beginning. It was always this kind of Shakespearean tragedy, you know, where there is a person who I love because I grew up with him and he is my brother, even if, you know, they discover that they're not entirely related or whatever, but they spent so much of their youth together that even though they, you know, Loki tries to backstab Thor, or he tries to, you know, undermine him or even kill him or whatever, they still have like this kind of complex love with each other. It's like a sibling rivalry that's sort of like, you know, amplified, but there's definitely something there, you know, some bond that they have. And it's usually felt through their, in particular through their parents, because I just watched that movie, and when Odin is saying that he's got to leave and that they're going to have to do this without him, they show the reactions of both of them. And you can see that Loki, who probably has more reason than anyone to hate his father, Odin, has, like, his teary-eyed. So there's definitely still, you know, something there. It's probably stronger than his desire to, like, make trouble, you know?
Yeah, I would say that that's true. It isn't just about the antagonism. It's, of course, the tragedy of having that relationship and the antagonism. But what I'm trying to get at is this entire story, the two people who Thor ends up learning most from are Loki and his father. Now, Loki might be a negative example or not necessarily a mentor example, but the thing is that if Odin is sort of representing Thor's eventual maturation into a leader, and he's trying to mentor Thor into being his own kind of leader, Loki sort of represents Thor learning to be a bit less headstrong, a bit less, you know, everything out in the open, a little bit more clever and cunning and intelligent about what he does. So instead of just charging in and being a hothead, he's, through this entire movie, he's starting to understand how Loki thinks and apply that thinking to improve his own strategy. And so these two relationships that Thor has influence and improve him as a person and eventually make him the leader that he becomes. And that's interesting because most times in movies, the people who will end up improving someone spiritually or emotionally are generally represented by women. You notice that? Like the main male character who's transformed by a woman's love or transformed by his relationship with you would on TV Tropes would call a morality pet is usually a woman or a girl, someone who brings out that empathetic side. And instead, this is really about Thor's, like the way that Thor evolves in the movie is through his relationships with his brother and his father. And that I think is actually really important to point out because it's unique and it's different. And what the other thing is interesting is that not only do you have those two really important relationships spurring Thor's growth into becoming a more well-rounded leader, you also see this one other relationship with the Valkyrie. And what's really interesting about the relationship with Valkyrie is it isn't, in a lot of movies, what they would do is they would probably have made Thor the one who needed to be inspired to become better, to become his, to do the right thing. And yet in this movie, he would be inspired by a woman, a female character, by Valkyrie, except it was a reverse in this one. Valkyrie was the dissolute drunkard. She was sort of gross too, like not.
She was. Valkyrie was Jessica Jones in space. It was exactly the same. She failed at something. She turned to drinking. She stopped giving a shit. You know, she was okay with like people getting killed. I mean, if you think about what her job was, it was to basically go bring people to the Grandmaster so they can get killed in the arena. She didn't have a problem with any of that. It was Jessica Jones in space. She was actually my least favorite character, but
I would argue that in this movie,
I think the Valkyrie of the characters that have, you know, speaking parts that are relatively significant, Valkyrie is my least favorite, of them. Yeah. That's what I would argue. I liked Hela, but, a lot more, but I have my own reasons for that, but go on. What would you say? For Valkyrie?
I actually did not mind her character that much because the difference between her and Jones is that Jessica Jones is that she actually was changed by the male character. By Thor.
Yeah.
She
was redeemed.
She was redeemed by Thor, by his good heart, essentially, as opposed to the usual way that this goes, which is the woman redeems the man through love and self-sacrifice and whatever.
Or a woman is redeemed by another woman.
Yeah, so I actually appreciated the Valkyrie character because unlike Jessica Jones, and maybe in Jessica Jones it is shown that what she's doing is actually really negative. The only problem is that I never really got a sense that she ever got out of her own head, Jessica Jones. And and ultimately the villain of the piece was it just fell flat because we're following his story and trying to be strong enough to challenge Jessica Jones when Jessica Jones is almost risking nothing. And at that point you're like, why is she so terrified of this guy? I mean, he has to spend this whole season trying to get strong enough to face her. That's really doesn't work. Anyway, so the whole Jessica Jones story was just, it just fell flat for me for that reason. But with Valkyrie, yeah. I mean, Hela is significantly stronger than Valkyrie. Like, she gets her ass kicked. There's one point during the final battle where she's trying to crawl away from it. And so there is that sense that Valkyrie is completely outclassed and could die. So she is actually losing something, or she's putting some skin in the game, whereas Jessica Jones never seemed to. She just was modeling for God knows what reason. But anyway, so then the other thing is that, again, it's that idea of Thor's pure heart redeeming Valkyrie, which is a reversal of what it usually is in a lot of these films. And there's no way, there's no impression that her behavior is correct or acceptable. For me, that wasn't as much of a problem because I think that they were saying, yeah, this is her choice to deal with her problems in this way isn't the right choice.
Yeah.
And Thor has influenced her through his goodness to make the right choice. And I appreciated that. Now I think that she was I thought it was hilarious that they would get into those, like, that physical comedy where, for example, she's drunk and she falls off her ship into a corpse and she's like, it's disgusting. So I'm glad that they actually went there with her with that. I think they might've pushed it a bit further, but for me, the character wasn't that bad. Like, it wasn't, you know, I don't know where they will go with her, if they will end up bringing her to a place where she's, you know, as a female character, she once again becomes the moral center of a story around which all the male characters revolve. But if they don't do that, if they keep her sort of a bit of an anti-hero, and they actually keep Thor the center of the moral center of the
story. Basically, they keep her more cynical and Thor is still sort of idealistic, or at the very least, you know, he's like more prince, like willing to put his principles and the stuff that he believes in over that sort of nihilism.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Yeah. As long as Thor remains the moral center of the story, and this is, I actually found his previous, like, I don't know if Valkyrie is intended to be a love interest, but I found his previous love interest.
I hope not.
I found his previous love interest to be annoying.
Oh, yeah. No, I think Jane Foster was... And, you know, it's not that they couldn't have done it. I just think that it was just... It wasn't... Sometimes I think that writers in Hollywood, most of the time, don't even understand love well enough to write it well. And I think that because in many of the love stories in not only these movies, but in a lot of actual romances are written badly. Like they're so phony and you could see right through it, you know, a lot of times. And the Jane Foster thing could have been good, but they just didn't do it well. And unfortunately, Natalie Portman, who I know is a good actress and could have done it better if she was given a better script, just didn't have it. And the Jane Foster character was just kind of doomed. Like, nobody cared by the second movie. You know, I didn't even like her in the first movie. I was like, they just wedged that in. And frankly, I don't really think that you need romances in all these movies. And it seems like they're always trying to force one in where it doesn't seem to fit. So I hope that, like, in with the Valkyrie, if they continue to use the character, which they may, they just sort of, I'd like that they would just stay friends, you know, and comrades, and as opposed to just sort of wedging in or forcing in this romance angle. I don't think that's necessary. There was one, though, we're talking about the Thor movies, there is one thing that I thought was an interesting thing that I wish they would explore a bit, which is a bit of a romance angle, but not in the quite the same way. There was a character in the first two films named Sif, who was a female. Do you know Sif,
yes,
the female warrior? Yeah, so they stopped using her for some reason, but they started to hint at this thing where she kind of, like, she had a thing for him, but she didn't want to tell him, and he was blind to it for whatever reason, you know, and I think that that could have been interesting to, like, explore if they do it well, but for whatever reason, they just dropped it, and I think that was a missed opportunity. If you're going to do romance, you know, maybe try to do it in some different way as opposed to the way that it comes across. Like, the whole thing with Jane Foster and Thor is it doesn't come across as love. It comes across as lust, like, or just an infatuation. You know, he's like this really hot guy with a great body, and he's exotic because he's from far away place, and he's fascinating. But there's no, she doesn't appear to be attracted to any virtues, because he doesn't, at the point that they meet, you know, he doesn't, he hasn't quite found them in himself yet, because that's one of the things I like about the first Thor movie, is that he's, you know, he's being taught this valuable lesson by Odin, who comes across as an asshole, but then it turns out that he was, like, wise enough to know how things would go. And they kind of go back to that, but they do it, and he's in a more directly, you know, kindly father figure in this last movie. Anyway, I'm kind of like, I'm rambling, but I'm looking at it this in the context of all three films. And so what I'm saying is, I agree with you with the Jane Foster thing. I think that that was handled badly. They could have written that way better. But at the same time, I'm like, if you don't put any romance in it at all, I'd be okay with it. Like, some of my favorite films that have a male-female duo in it have no romance at all. They're just two people doing a job together, and they admire each other for qualities outside of, you know, some kind of base sexual attraction.
Well, in terms of the Jane Foster thing, I think that those particular movies with her in them sort of reflect what I'm talking about with the standard operating procedure, where the woman changes the man for the better. And because the thing is that the implication in the first film,
Peterson. I'm sorry, real quick, but Peterson calls that an archetype. Like, it's like the woman that tames the man, or tames the man and changes him. I think that's what they're doing, but it's kind of perverted in a way, because they become the moral center, and it's like the man doesn't have that. And yeah, and inversion of that would make it more interesting. But I think that's what they're going for.
Yeah, with the Jane Foster thing, it would feel less gross if she had actually changed virtuously for the better, but I do not recall that she did really change at all through being loved by Thor. Whereas in this movie, Valkyrie,
she wasn't made a better person. She was the same person.
She wasn't made a better person, and I think that's probably why the relationship really fell flat. Maybe for you, because Thor, Jane Foster may have had an influence on Thor morally and emotionally, but he didn't have an influence on her. And that just makes a story, like, it doesn't make a romance. It just makes a schmaltzy Hallmark card, and it really falls flat. It falls flat as a card. Okay, but I think that in this...
Yeah, and the only way you could... And the only way you could do that, like, the only way you could do... something where the Thor character makes Jane Foster a better person for having known him, is if she was flawed in some way before she met him. But she doesn't really have any negative qualities. You know, she's courageous, she's smart, she's a risk taker. Like, if you watch it, you know, she chases storms. She's a scientist. You know, she's got, like, the chutzpah. She's got all the qualities. So after, like, getting to know Thor, she doesn't evolve much, because there's nowhere for her to go. Thor has a lot of places that he can go. You know, he may have all these strengths, but he's also brash and headstrong and, you know, he's kind of prideful and maybe even a bit arrogant. These are all qualities that he can improve on, you know.
And he's too invested in his self-confidence is too invested in his hammer, which is the thing that he resolved in here. But that's why I actually prefer Valkyrie over Jane Foster. And I'm so glad that Jane Foster is gone. Goodbye. Yeah. I'm glad I'm never going to have to see your character again. And I really hope that if they are going to do a romance, I would much prefer a romance with a character, not necessarily Valkyrie, but a character in a similar vein, where she's introduced and she has flaws. She's given up. She's obviously suffering from serious depression. I mean, at one point, Thor calls her a coward for running away. Yeah. And he's exactly right. She is a coward for running away. So Valkyrie is a female character who has serious flaws, as serious as Thor's flaws in the first film. So for me to have a relationship between a male character and a female character, romance, the real core of a romance is that both change each other, both improve each other. They bring out their virtues. With Jane Foster, the only virtues that were brought out were Thor's. With Valkyrie, really, it's mostly Valkyrie overcoming her own flaws and Thor bringing out the virtues in her, which, you know, ultimately might not result in a very interesting romance because of that. But on the other hand, I think that that is actually very different than what was going on with Jane Foster and why I think I prefer this, because it's unique. It's different. You don't see a lot of movies that have the male character through their good heart and their moral strength call out a female character for her flaws and have her be like, yeah, you're right. I need to improve myself. That doesn't happen very often, and I appreciate it when it does, which is why I appreciated the character of Valkyrie. And she didn't bother me because her flaws were called out by Thor, and she did eventually say, yeah, you're right. So that whole thing was, I actually thought it was different, I thought it was well done, and I really appreciated it. And it's one of the reasons why I thought to bring up this movie, because of that dynamic, and the change in that dynamic. Yeah. They went from a Jane Foster, ugh, get the fuck rid of that character, I never want to see her again, because it's the typical woman improving the man morally, to the Valkyrie being called out by Thor, and in turn saying, yeah, you're right, and I'm going to improve. So that's in my mind, that's good. That's an improvement. The other thing I wanted to bring up is I really liked Hela as a character.
Yeah, like, I really like Hela too.
Oh, she was just unapologetically evil. And I just love it.
I love it.
I loved it.
I love it. I mean, it was, I was so relieved. And I was just talking to Stapler while we were watching. I was watching the movie and she asked me, because I was kind of, you know, I read the comics, right? So I have issues that I don't need to bring up because I know that they're not really that important to the core. I have issues with Ragnarok on the canon and like the comics because I know what the comics is supposed to be like and how this diverges from it. And it's a pet peeve thing. It's not really a deal breaker, but, you know, I have complaints and I was making them. But I still, the first time I watched Ragnarok, I thought it was okay, but I didn't think it was strong. And then I watched it again when I bought it on Blu-ray because I was going to buy it anyway. And I liked it more the second time. It's like the more I watch it, the more I like it. So we were watching it and she said, so what do you think about Hela? And I was like, oh, Hela's great. And I said the main reason is because she is the first female character I've seen in a long time that's being made as a villain, and they're not trying to make her sympathetic. They're not trying to sell us some story about how something happened to her that made her this way, which is what is often done these days is when there's a female antagonist, she is made sympathetic so that you don't, you can't hate her. You often even sympathize with her. Maleficent is a good example, that movie about the same character. And Hela in this movie actually reminds me of the Disney Sleeping Beauty villain Maleficent in the animated version, where she was just evil for evil's sake. So much so that Odin had to lock her away because he couldn't kill her, you know? And I thought she was just great because she was so evil and she just played it straight and Cate Blanchett just sold it. And I was very happy with Hela. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a fantastic character. She just, no indication that she'll be redeemed at all. Just, no. All I want is to drive my enemies before me and hear the lamentation of their women.
Yeah.
That's it. That's just who she is. That's just what she's going to do. And it was just refreshing. It was refreshing. And I love Thor's line. Oh, you can't, I would love nothing more than to give somebody else the throne, but I can't give it to you because you're the worst.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was great. And it was refreshing to have a movie. Like if you look at it overall, if you take a step back and look at it overall, the female villain is just unrepentantly evil. She's just about the conquest. She's just about power.
Yeah, even the executioner, who in the comics was a straight up villain, even he redeems himself. You know, like he actually changes sides to save the Asgardians, and that's actually interesting because he's a male character that we are sort of invited to sympathize with when he watches what's happening to the people around him. He's sort of like this Judas figure, you know, he betrays his people and sides with the enemy. And then like, as it goes on, he starts to see what's happening. You could see the in his face that he's like, what have I done? And then he sort of switches sides right at the end. And then I was like, wow, even the executioner redeems himself while Hela just remains, you know, just cartoonishly evil.
Well, and it's not even because there's, I don't even know if I want to say cartoonishly evil, but just,
I don't mean it as an insult, but yeah. I mean like it's very direct, you know. It's like evil in the same way that the Emperor Palpatine was just evil. Like there was no talking him out of it, you know. He was gonna do what he was gonna do, and he likely, because I think they actually, you know, they don't just, Hela actually believes that in what she is doing, in that she doesn't think that she's evil, right? Like, she delights in it, but at the same time, she thinks that what she does is necessary. I think she actually believes strongly in it. So it's not completely unbelievable. You know, she's just a psychopath, basically. And I was comparing it to the Emperor from Star Wars because it's the same idea. He's just a bad guy. Like, that's it. He's just the bad guy.
Yeah.
You don't have to ask any questions, you know?
Yeah, there's no need, and they didn't go the route of trying to redeem her. And what's interesting too is the character who ends up betraying the Asgardians, Skag, right? Or
Scourge the executioner.
Yeah. He actually gets further in helping the good guys by keeping his head down and then choosing the right moment to turn. Than the Warriors mm-hmm. Three did, who just were basically annihilated in the first 5 minutes of Hela's rule.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting point as well. But I just wanted to take a step back and look at the full picture. So we have this unapologetic female villain that you are not supposed to sympathize with, and he's never given any real sense of sympathy. Maybe a little bit when she says that her father banished her, despite having created her in to be a weapon. But she never really plays it like, oh, no, poor is
she
me.
Doesn't sugarcoat it any at all. She says,
simply because my ambition outgrew his, he banished me, caged me, locked me away like an animal.
Yeah.
And it doesn't paint her as sympathetic. It's
no, you know, because what the heck is he supposed to do with her? She will not, she won't reconsider the way that she approaches life. She's just going to take everything that she,
yeah, in
by
fact,
force.
Because she does this weird, like, sins of the father thing, right? Where she says stuff about how, you know, where do you think all this gold came from? Like, essentially saying that Odin did a bunch of terrible, terrible things, and he's decided that he's going to stop doing it and do peace treaties and like try to bring everything together and help everybody. And she doesn't think that, she considers that to be dishonest. or deceitful. Like, he shouldn't be doing that. He should just be the person that he was when she knew him, as opposed to trying to change things. And I find that also pretty interesting. It's like, even Odin wanted to, you know, he saw like, oh, you know, I was probably doing all this wrong. Let me try to fix it. And Hela did not like that at all.
No, and she was insistent on keeping it keeping it all about force and subjugation. And at that point, you know, you a little bit of sympathy, but then what can you do? Like, if he's going to try to change and she will not, then there's not much he can do. And it's interesting, this whole story is really about Thor finding out Odin's secret past with Hela, and then overcoming it. Because if you think about it, Odin was the one who built Asgard. And if Hela is right, he built Asgard from, I guess, the booty of all of his expeditions into the nine realms. And when Odin says that Thor is stronger than him, when Thor gives up Asgard to save its people, it's almost like he's overcome all of that. Like, he's completely reversed the entire negative karma of what Odin did by letting go of that and just giving it to Hela. Like, you can have it. You were the one who supposedly won this for Odin. Have it, and I will take the people and save them from you, because that's what matters. So it's this sort of like circular story, and in that sense, I guess Odin made a final fix to the issues that Odin, or sorry, Thor made this final fix to the problems that Odin had created by being in the same mentality as Hela. So it's like this nice little, I guess, the son redeeming the father and the father teaching the son about his true power. So almost a little bit like Star Wars, the original series.
A bit,
you know, but Odin is a much more genial mentor figure in a way. So, I like it. And again, if you step backwards, you got this unapologetic female villain. And then the other woman in the movie is actually changed for the better by the main male character morally. So it's definitely a very, like, I would say this is definitely a very different take on all of these tropes than you usually see. You usually see the Jane Foster changing the man for the better, changing Thor for the better. And then you see the reverse here. And the other thing I wanted to bring up was, and just a concluding point, really, I wanted to talk about this sort of, because I know a lot of people find it controversial, the amount of diversity they put into Asgard, considering that these are Norse myths, and yet Heimdall
is black. Like, all of the refugees, like the sort of like the people that he's trying to save, they're mostly like, you know, they're a mix of like Asians and there's like some Middle Eastern people thrown in there. It's like there's a mixture of people. But yeah, go ahead with that.
Yeah, and it's a little bit interesting since it is, as I said, a Norse myth. So you would think
They're based on Norse myths, yeah.
I don't know. In the comics, do they actually have like this kind of multicultural...
No.
No.
Okay, in the comics, they're all the Norse... I mean, like, they may have changed it recently, but like when I was reading them and in Jack Kirby's time, like basically all the way up until... Perhaps, you know, Marvel's gone full SJW or whatever. The Asgard was white. I mean, it was Asgard. Yeah, it was just all white. Just in the same way that the land of Heliopolis, which was another sort of mythical place of the gods, all the people that lived there were Egyptian, or at least, you know, they looked Egyptian. So, Asgard was all white, with one exception, which was Khogun the Grim of the Warriors 3, who was Asian. But I don't think he was actually from Asgard. I think he was from another place, and he just happened to live there.
Okay, so that's interesting. And I know that there's probably a lot of controversy over the, you know, including black people and Asian people in Asgard.
There's some. I mean, like, you know, it's one of those things, like, it's kind of weird and obvious, you know, for people that this is sort of being crammed in there. But for the most part, like, I don't think that there's like a shitstorm over it or anything like that. People have just kind of said, okay, I guess this is what Asgard is, but it seems a little odd. You know, kind of like in the same way that I think that they made the in the Lord of the Rings movies, all of the people in those films mostly were white, with the exception of people that were from other parts of the world, like the Easterlings and whatnot. And in the Hobbit films, the folks of Rivertown were suddenly a diverse mix of people. And again, nobody said that, you know, I didn't see like outrage over it per se, but I think people were sort of like, oh, that's odd. You know, like I'm noticing that this is, that there's some changes that have been made, and I have a feeling I know why. And that's pretty much it. And I think that was it. Like for me, it was like, yeah, okay, Heimdall's black. I guess so. It seems odd, but I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna cry over it.
Yeah, I just find it interesting because it wouldn't it be about as strange as having Wakanda have, you know, I don't know, Asians and white people
white in people it? In it? Absolutely. Yeah. But you see, that's just it. If Wakanda did have, like, you know, whites or Asians in it, there would be outrage. They would say, you know, for once we almost had our all black movie, but you know, they put this in here and it doesn't make sense. You know, there would be a problem. And so they didn't do that. Because really, without like, I know that the whole diversity thing isn't really like what we, you know, focus on. But really, when Hollywood and the mainstream media talks about diversity, what they mean is fewer white people. That's really what they mean. That's what they mean. If it doesn't have white people in it, it's diverse. It can be like they said that about Black Panther. They said this is diverse as fuck, you know, at 90% black people. And I was like, that's not diverse. That's that means that it's almost like monoracial. But this is what it means to the MSM and the SJWs. I mean, it's just less white people.
Yep. And I just find it interesting because there's an unintended consequence to this, that perhaps the people who are sort of injecting this diversity into these movies don't realize. By doing this, they're actually making the white Norse myths or the Norse myths more universal and mm-hmm. more like they apply to all human beings. So they're actually creating a situation where the myths based on a white ethnic culture become
actually more welcoming,
and more, yeah. Like I said, more universal. Like they actually mean everybody. So it's like they have this white mythology that includes everyone now. And then they have this black mythology, which only includes black people. So it's almost like they're saying that the white mythology says more about being human. Did they consider that?
No.
Something more beyond even being white or black. The white mythology taps into the central and main and primary aspects of humanity and applies to everyone. Whereas the black mythology only applies to black people because it doesn't tap into that universal humanity that the white mythology does. I don't know if the people at Marvel who are pushing this kind of diversity realize that that is actually the real message of what they're doing. Anyway, I know that isn't our primary focus on here. It's mostly talking about the gender dynamics.
Yeah, it's just an interesting side thing.
Just something I wanted to bring up and point out.
Yeah.
And any concluding thoughts on Thor Ragnarok?
Well,
Jeff Goldblum was awesome.
Okay, yeah. So Grandmaster is the best character in the film. He is the best character in the movie. My favorite.
So, you're welcome. And it's a tie.
No, I thought he was great. I also I liked the Hulk and Thor chemistry they had. Was a lot of fun. They were kind of, you know, bro-ing it up, so I dug that too. But yeah, I think that's it. That was actually some pretty interesting perspectives that I had not considered. I guess you know, like I said before, the more I watch it, the more it grows on me. And I will always take some issues with it as a nerd of the Thor comics about how different it is from the source material. But if I look at it as a film on its own worth, it is good. So I do enjoy it.
Yeah, actually, we didn't talk much about Thor and Hulk broing it up.
Yeah. They made Hulk a lot of fun. They finally got it right. I was waiting for them to finally get it, and they did. So I enjoyed that, and it was a good time. Those characters tended to be more for me anyway. I was more sympathetic to them than I was to, say, Valkyrie. I mean, like, I was okay with her, and I'm glad that things worked out the way you said. But, like, if we didn't see her again for, like, the second half of the film, and it was just, like, Hulk and Thor and Loki doing stuff, I'd have been fine with that. So,
yeah, true enough. But, like I said, if you step back, female villain, completely unapologetic. Other female character in the film is changed for the better by the good heart of the main male character. The main mm-hmm. male character does most of his growth through his relationships to other men, his father, his brother, yeah. The Hulk, which I don't know, I guess they're friends now or something. Work friends.
We know each other. He's a friend from work.
Yeah, they were, I think they were always friends, but there was always probably like this little bit of, like which one of us is stronger kind of rivalry going on.
Yeah.
But I think that's part of, like, they have a little bit of competition, you know, a competitiveness between them. But I think that's part of what makes their relationship, you know, fun and good for them, too.
Yeah.
They kind of make each other better people in a way, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in terms of what Hulk represented, there's that challenge to be the hothead, I think that ultimately in doing, and this is the spoiler, of course, Thor, at the climax of the movie, realizes he is no match for Hela. She completely outmatches him in terms of her strength. Not necessarily physical mm-hmm. capacity, but just physical plus all the elemental powers of deathness that I guess she... Of death.
Making swords from nothing is basically what death does, apparently.
Yeah, she's got the elemental power of death, and he has the elemental power of lightning, and he does his best, but she cannot make a dent on her. So he ends up realizing that he can't solve this problem face on. He can't go toe-to-toe with Hela and defeat her to save Asgard, or at least the place. And in a sense, that sort of reflects the battle he has with Hulk, because his big main rivalry is being over the strongest Avenger. Which one of us is Hulk stronger, physically stronger than me? So that's their competition. And then he's faced mm-hmm. with his sister, who's so much outclasses him. And he has to let go of that. He has to let go of trying to be the strongest by defeating her. And he's to realize there's no way he can defeat her. So he has to end up using Loki's guile to actually trick her and get her to fight the demon that he defeated in the first scene, Sartre. So he had to
Surtur.
So he had to actually trick Hela and Surtur into fighting each other over Asgard and let go of Asgard. Now Odin was mm-hmm. the one who couldn't the one who built Asgard. Thor was the one who ended up letting go of Asgard to save the people of Asgard, and he did so by not fighting Hela directly, but making her fight a stronger opponent. And mm-hmm. it's like, as all of these threads come together, letting go of this, the toxicity of his rivalry with the Hulk, of wanting to be the strongest, learning to maybe approach a problem not head on, but from the side, like Loki, and then realizing what Odin meant when he said Thor is stronger than me. He didn't mean physically stronger. He didn't mean stronger the way Hela is stronger than Odin, or Hela is stronger than Thor, or Hela is stronger than the Hulk, or Hela is stronger than everyone except the demon. He meant that Thor had this ability to overcome these issues and to grow in a way that he either couldn't or wasn't, it wasn't his part of the story, or maybe that Odin's growth was to become this spiritual mentor figure to Thor, as opposed to being the strong leader character in his life. So it's like this, all of these interweaving factors coming together Thor being improved by every single relationship, and each of these relationships is with a man, learning from each of those relationships, learning to become a better person from his relationship to his friend, his work colleague, his relationship to his brother, his relationship to his father, and defeating his sister. Do you see how this is almost the exact opposite of what you usually get in a world saturated with women worsting?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I found really remarkable about this film. It's like this real, if you look at it through this lens, it's this real hidden gem. So I just wanted to lay that out there. Maybe give
no, those
give
are
people,
those are good points.
Maybe give people who listen to us another angle to appreciate Ragnarok.
And, appreciate the end of the world.
And I actually was really deeply impacted by that too. It's not a place, it's a people. And he had to make that very mature decision to let go of everything his father had built to save the people of his realm. And he really did become a leader in that moment. So I'll leave it at that. I thought it was a great story and a definite reversal of what you usually see in From Hollywood.
Hmm. I got to say that those are good points. I had not considered many of those, and I have a feeling that a lot of people hadn't considered those things. I definitely gave a lot of thought to Hela, and but I hadn't considered the whole redemption thing with Valkyrie and stuff. So it's good. Okay, so I guess we could. You want to wrap it up?
Sure, yeah. If you enjoy this content, please consider becoming a patron, www.patreon.com/honeybadgerradio. Or if you don't particularly like Patreon, you can give us one-time or ongoing donations options through www.feedthebadger.com. And I look forward to talking to you guys next time about a new thing, something new from Hollywood, something interesting, something fun.
So again, we'll talk to you guys next time when we do another Hollywood film. Thanks for joining us on the show, and goodbye for now.
I'm actually organizing another revolution. I don't know if you'd be interested in something like that. Do you reckon you'd be interested?